Hi, my name is Maggie Love, and I'm with my co-founder, Sammy Issa of Web3 Cloud. And we're panicked about Howard's NFT collection.
Knut.
Hello, Howard.
How are you, buddy?
I am excellent. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I am excited. We are going to do a series of shows over the next few months around what has me most excited. I know people know that have listened to the show, have heard me talk about crypto. We've had multi-coin people on. I've been a very, a drafter behind smart people of Web3. And learning, as you know, and being skeptical, but yet probing. And through all this time, I'm ready. You know, I have my angle of attack of how I want to spend the next 10 years, you know, working on the blockchain and infrastructure and Web3 and NFTs and community. And I've seen enough people both make a lot of money, blow up, complain, do things wrong, do things right. I consider myself a fast follower, as you know. I don't like to break ground. I leave it to the people like Fred Wilson and our guest today. But once I sense kind of a tipping point or a catalyst, and I consider a catalyst happening right now, we're November 2022, the catalyst being a bear market, which is, I don't know what they call it in crypto, nuclear crypto winters. I don't know what we're in crypto. We're just in a real bear market. So it's just, in a bear market, Knut, everything's correlated. So it doesn't matter. Crypto is not correlated. I think there was a couple of years there where everybody thought crypto was going to the moon despite the markets going down. And now we realize it's all correlated. So that is my impetus for leaning in. And when I say leaning in, I believe, at least until facts change, when I got into the web too, 2006 when YouTube and Twitter came out, I wasn't a LinkedIn guy. And then the crash happened. It wasn't related to anything YouTube or Web 2, but the financial crisis happened. Web 3 already has had a couple booms, but now we're in a global, not financial crisis yet, but we're in a global bear market in equity, in pricing. So it's going to shake the boots and shake valuations and shakes people's true confidence and really force people to come up with business models. And I think there's enough infrastructure, which is the topic of today, because you need infrastructure to allow the entrepreneurs to build good shit. And then you need you need proper pricing, so expectations are set. So I think we have all this happening, expectation reset, pricing reset, and infrastructure growth, and business people like me who aren't first come first. We don't attack it first because we don't understand a lot of the tech now coming into the space. And so who better to have on than friends of mine? And I say friends of them because I think we don't talk about it often on this show, but Social Leverage Acquisition Corp, Slack, which is a company I'm CEO of, has announced a proposed merger with Web3 Cloud. And as I said, I'm CEO of Slack. And Social Leverage Fund 4, one of our funds, our latest funds, where I'm a GP, is a shareholder, a member of the sponsor group. So that's just out front, full disclosure. Doesn't mean we can't talk about it. And now is the time that I feel like it'd be a great time to have the founders of the company Web3 Cloud on the show to talk about all the things that got me excited, but all the work that had to be done behind the scenes and continues to need to get done in infrastructure and onboarding people to the Web3 or Web 2.1 or wherever we're going to call it. Does that make sense to you, Knut?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
So I've got Sammy Issa and I've got Maggie Love. A great name. Not that Issa's not a good name, but Love. And we've got Maggie Love. She's in Brooklyn today, and Sammy's in New York, Manhattan. And they have an incredible founder origin story that we'll get into. Maggie is the co-founder of Web3 Cloud and director of ecosystem and partnerships. And she's focused on deploying compute and storage infrastructure for Web3 protocols. Now, that's a mouthful, and we'll get into all this stuff. And Web3 Cloud is a joint venture between Consensus, and Consensus is a very early Ethereum backer and adopter and ecosystem, and Advanced Micro Devices, and that becomes important. We'll talk about that. And then she's also the founder of SHEFI, S-H-E-F-I, which is a crypto educational initiative for women, which is phenomenal. Great name, great everything, great website. And since 2020, she's onboarded 1,000 women through the program. So imagine that'll be in the tens of thousands of women over the next few years.
Impressive.
Their running program. So yeah, so we'll get their origin story, talk about everything she knows and why she's excited about this. And then we also have my friend Sammy Issa, who's the CEO and a founder of Web3 Cloud. Born in Cairo, educated in Cairo. Long story short, he knows infrastructure. He spent 20 plus years at Intel. He's helped build Global Foundries. And, you know, interesting story. He went to ASU, like us.
That's great.
Yeah. So they are worried about my NFT portfolio from what I heard. And I want to put their hearts at ease because Harry has a very tiny, if not almost zero-ish, valuable NFTs. So we want to talk about the words compute. We want to talk about the words trustless. We want to talk about the words Web3. We want to talk about infrastructure, Web3 protocols. And so we're not going to talk about the company until we explain their passion and understanding of this space and give people kind of a glossary of why this is an important time and era and the future, right? As we think about Web2 and all the Goliaths and why blockchain and infrastructure and compute are important. So welcome, Maggie and Sammy.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you. Yes, great to be here.
So I'm going to ask, and you both can chime in, because I want people to understand the word compute in a Web2 and Web3 sense. Sammy, because of your background in foundries and at Intel, what should people understand when they hear that?
So anytime, every time you do anything on your phone, or most of the functions that you do on your mobile phone or your laptop, any of the social media activities, I'm sure many of us are on TikTok half of the day, Snap, Facebook, whatever it is the platform, you're trading crypto, you're trading stock, you're one of the platforms. The front end of that is running on your mobile phone, your laptop, but then there is a massive computer somewhere in the world in a big data center communicating with your terminal, whether it is a phone or a laptop or PC, desktop, executing the functions that you are requesting. So compute underpins everything we do on the internet today, and it underpins everything we do on Web3 as well. And it's a very, very important infrastructure needed for our day and the way we live.
So, Sammy, does Amazon Compute mean something different from AMD Compute or NVIDIA GPU? Like, explain so people, when they hear the lingo in financial media and tech, like, what's the easiest way to think about it as applied to crypto and the web?
So AMD and NVIDIA and Intel make the semiconductors that basically they building blocks semiconductors that constitute a compute. AWS would buy those semiconductors in big boxes and repeat them thousands and thousands of times in big, massive data centers where the applications run, whether it is TikTok or other applications that every one of us use today run. So there is a whole supply chain from, you know, entities that make the semiconductors, entities that manufacture the semiconductors like Global Foundries or TSMC, to cloud providers like Google or AWS that use that hardware to service the applications that you and I and everybody uses today, every day. Does that make sense?
Yes. So what's different between Web3 infrastructure then and Web2 infrastructure?
The key differentiation here is as we transition to Web3, the notion of decentralization, the invention of the blockchain allowed us to create trust outside of a giant tech company. And decentralization is basically the ethos of Web3, means that compute is not owned by one particular entity, and you are not, in essence, have to run within their platform. Compute is decentralized across the globe. It is permissionless. You know, nobody can shut you down. Nobody can tell you you can get in or not get in. You can develop your application on it, on that decentralized compute infrastructure, and you're not imprisoned in it. You can take your applications and move it to another platform easily. So decentralization is the key notion of Web3, and that's possible because of the invention of a blockchain technology.
And so theoretically, explain for the cynical. So now a company pays you or hires Web3 Cloud. Aren't they in a way somewhat decentralized because they can call you and complain?
Well, I mean, if you look at the different protocols that underpin Web3, mm-hmm. they run on a very long tail of compute infrastructure. Web3 Cloud is not the only entity that runs it. So if Web3 Cloud decided, for example, to shut down all our compute infrastructure, and we have, say, four protocols running, those protocols will continue running. They're not going to shut down because we just shut it down.
Right.
Which is not the case in Web2. In Web2, if XYZ company decided to turn off power, all the applications or most of the applications that are running inside will be affected, and in many cases will be affected severely.
So when you hear whether an Amazon East Coast is down, that theoretically can't happen or will happen, but at least you can't stop it. What's the difference when you hear that? Like all the internet is down because of the East Coast.
There are mirrors and repeaters and et cetera in the Web2 space to try to bridge this a bit. But it is in the decision-making power of one legal entity to decide to shut you down XYZ application. In the Web3 world, that power is difficult to attain.
Interesting.
Because the compute is distributed and it's decentralized. And even if XYZ entity, meaning Web3 Cloud, for example, decided to shut down particular application, that same application is running on many other compute infrastructures elsewhere that we don't control.
Right. So Maggie, when I say crypto and Web3, what got you excited about, you know, being involved in this space and eventually starting this company, but being involved in Web3 and crypto?
Yes. So my introduction to crypto was in 2016 in a corporate strategy meeting at IBM. And they were talking about technologies and financial services. And someone was on the phone and they kept talking about blockchain. And everybody in the room was like, mute that guy. He won't stop talking about blockchain because he wasn't in person. And I took that as a, well, that's really cool. Someone's really excited about something at IBM. I should go learn about what that is. And I picked up a book in Barnes & Noble in Union Square, so a physical bookstore, believe it or not, and looked up blockchain in the lookup system there and picked up The Blockchain Revolution and read that in about 2 days. And that was all focused on the use cases. So global remittances, supply chain, being able to verify ownership of a variety of items, especially in places in the world where that's not possible, the implications for finance, taking things from T plus three, so the time that, you know, financial payments or otherwise actually settle, to T plus zero, so instantly. And it felt like I could be a part of something that was tech that also had a social good element to it. So I wouldn't be optimizing Watson for back-end banking office processes and trying to sell that into big banks, but I could be on the bleeding edge of tech and, you know, working with technology that changes the way value is created and distributed and who gets access to it. So that was definitely when the light bulb went off in my head. I was like, oh, this is finally it. I can do something in tech that has a better impact on the world than what I've seen to date in my experience. So that was in 2016. I spent the rest of 2016 hiding in a variety of cubicles at IBM and interviewing with blockchain companies. I interviewed with Paxos, very early on, a company called Sweetbridge, which is no longer around, looked up blockchain on LinkedIn and found somebody that worked at Consensys that went to University of Illinois with a bunch of my friends, got the introduction, met that person for coffee, went into the Consensys office. This was early 2017. Huh. Everyone was super happy, young, nice, looked excited about what they were doing, weren't wearing uniforms. And I was like, this is it. I have to work here. It was a flat in Bushwick, so very different than corporate offices in IBM in Midtown or Astor Place in Union Square.
So you're come from the practical side, like you were looking up applications first, and it's kind of a perfect partnership, the two of you. And Sammy comes at it from a technology and stack and how this is going to happen. So we'll get into how you met. So I think for me to try and explain it to my listeners, all of Web 2 probably wouldn't happen if we were still hooking up our own Dell servers like back in Web 1, right? So along comes AWS, and they are basically compute of Web 2. They allow startups like StockTwits and Twitter does it themselves, let's say, but all these startups to hook up to Amazon, and traffic could scale up and down without you buying machines and unplugging machines, you know, and hiring extra people at the office. So that's Web 2. And then Azure and, let's say, Google Cloud, those are the three now competing. And at first, it became heaven. And here we are in 2022, and they're all trillion-dollar companies. But now, heaven is kind of hell for anybody that wants to build a Web 2 company, because they are really our landlord. And maybe less evil than the landlords of past, but that's what Web 2 is. We have three landlords. Then along comes Web 3, which will need just as much compute if everybody has the same vision as they did. And is that like the really big difference, Sammy? Is that the way I should frame it, or is there a different way to frame that?
No, this is perfect framing. you know, we live in the backyard of three giants, and we get to operate within the rules and the requirements set by them and changed by them at any moment. Web3 basically allows us to get out of those three backyards that we are living in as entrepreneurs or content creators or innovators or users or consumer as well. I mean, we are all in the same, in essence, bucket between three or four or five, no more than five giants that set the rules and monetize.
And they set the rules in the sense that you can't get bigger than them because something's going to happen along the way, meaning we're constrained now by our landlord.
Absolutely.
Which is still fantastic for if you want to set up a Shopify store or a blog. Don't get me wrong, it's not going away. The Web 2 leaders are not going away. But really, I just think the story Maggie has a better, you know, just the marketing brain of hers with SheFi. It's storytelling. And I believe, and this is why I'm finally excited, is I can finally explain it in my own story. So in my own story, and tell me if I'm wrong, I get to, instead of starting my next company as a non-engineer, have to hire engineers to build for Android, for iOS, for the web, this, apps, all these things that I build to build StockTwits, per se. And I'm not an engineer or designer, so I was doomed in many ways from the beginning. I could theoretically build on the blockchain, have my app. I don't have to get approval from Apple. I can figure out how to get paid in Ethereum. There's now Crosslink stuff that allows me still to get paid, even though it's on the blockchain, with Apple Pay or credit card. So it allows me finally to understand there is an opportunity to still appeal globally to my audience, but not have to be engineering and design heavy. Does that make sense? Am I right at some level?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the beauty of open source and composability is that you're able to compound the effects, the work of others on top of each other, kind of like a compound interest, and the value exponentially accrue to everybody in the open source community. I mean, you've seen this to a great extent in Linux of the past, you know, I don't know, three, four decades. We're seeing this multiply thousands in the Web3 space, and every protocol or most of the protocols are open source, and people are able to kind of add value on top of each other and exponentially accrue the value across the entire ecosystem.
Now, for me, what that means, Maggie and Sammy, correct me, FTX has a token, and it was built on the ERC-20. So you can trade FTT. I can go and take, copy their code, change a few numbers, you know, market cap, whatever, how many I want traded, etc. And like you said, now I'm compounding the code, meaning I'm now applying it to a completely different community or product or market to be completely used in my own way, hopefully for good. Some people we're seeing just don't know what they're doing or doing it for greed. And that's the compounding of open source code, correct?
Correct. Yes. Now it took you much less time than the previous person to get to similar results.
And that's,
so that's the exponential value accruing.
And if someone had explained it, and I guess it's my fault because I just didn't have the right mentor or teacher or interest because I was still stuck in Web 2, or the right incentives, or really understood who my overlords were, to understand how mind-blowing this is, because the problem with open source has been the business model. And this time, open source is the business model, your product, your whole existence, and the fact that it's plug and play and copy and pasteable, and it's really in the eye of, it's what you do with it, and it doesn't even have to be a business model. And so explain to me, you know, the compounding thing's genius. So code is now compounding. And it's such an important word, composability. Maggie, what does that mean to you?
Composability, this does come from the early days of open source code. So a lot of Web 1 was built on open source code. And as you mentioned, it didn't have business models. And now in Web 3, we actually have the ability to combine business models atomically with open source code, you could say. Mm-hmm. In the Web 3 world, a lot of the code is open source and composable, and composability really allows anyone in a network to leverage that open source code or leverage existing programs or, you know, leverage even existing business models that are open and adapt or build on top of them. And so everything in Web 3 in crypto can essentially within the same blockchain ecosystem, plug and play into each other. So you can start leveraging code instead of building your own code. Whereas in Web 2, the way they made business was by closed sourcing code, mm-hmm. having proprietary code.
Yes.
We don't know the algorithms that are defining TikTok, but now we know we have to change the way we do Instagram. If you run any type of business that uses these social media platforms, now Twitter has videos as well. Like none of that were able to know. And there was even a point in time where Twitter had open source APIs, and then they closed them as soon
Correct.
As they got profitable.
Correct. We're behind because of some of the mistakes Twitter made by, you know, and this won't happen now. And it's just so interesting that it took me so long. So Web 1 was much like, the reason I didn't understand Web 1 is because, first of all, the screen sucked and internet was more texty and cost of getting a computer was high and laptops sucked, and the speeds were slow, but the products were all built like magazines. So Web 1 was just taking magazines, putting them on the internet, and along yep. comes Web 2. The Web 3, the reason I didn't get excited about it and just luckily, just directionally believed in the smart people and said, we'll make money. That era is now over, but was like, let's build Uber on the blockchain. Let's build this on the blockchain. Let's build that. There was no real thought of what it really is and what it's meant to be. And so I looked at it with a crooked eye. But now that I truly have seen some of our companies use it in different ways, the light bulb has gone off and I am super, super bullish. So now I want to get into like how Web3 Cloud started and what it is and why it's such an important company. And if not Web3 Cloud, there'll be hundreds of these or with Web3 Cloud. This is not a winner-take-all world anymore in the blockchain world. So the timing of what you're building is perfect. So origin story, you know, now we set the frame of where I think we are, right? Like it took a while for Howie, Dumbo to really, there was just so much noise, I would say, and such bad marketing and so much, I don't know, just rush to like be rich. And it felt like Web3 was just, you know, bad Web2. But you were excited. You go to Consensus, you network. Give me the origin story of how Web3 Cloud starts.
Yes. So in 2017, I joined Consensus on a team called Strategic Initiatives. So that was a team of ex-consultants that were in consensus to help either startups within the ecosystem grow and become something, drive large client engagements, or talk to companies and people that were interested in how blockchain fits into their strategy. And so I worked closely with Joseph Lubin, who is the co-founder of Ethereum and founder of Consensys. And so in September 2017, he mentioned Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, and a couple other people wanted to meet with Consensys to figure out what they should be doing in the blockchain space or to pitch an idea. So Joe asked me to put together a presentation, as all good consultants know how to do that, on, you know, what is Ethereum? What's the origin story of Ethereum? What's the timeline? So Ethereum used to have this timeline to switch to, you know, proof of stake, where it's at today. And, you know, what are all the different use cases that where blockchain can be applied? And then, you know, at the end, actually, what's been going on with AMD and GPU sales, even though that wasn't necessarily talked about by the chip companies at that time, Joe still wanted it in the deck. So, you know, I'm fresh into Consensys, working late nights, putting this deck together. And so then, you know, that was the materials that used in the first meeting with Sammy Weil and Dr. Lisa Su. And, you know, back in the day, Ethereum didn't have a website. So I was on Reddit, reading Vitalik's comments on Reddit, trying to find out what the Ethereum, original Ethereum timeline was. So it was quite a like fire hose of jumping into my role at Consensys. And Joe was so impressed with that. He asked me to lead the closing the deal, working with Sammy Weil and other people from Consensys closely to make this deal happen. And originally it was going to be a more of a consulting type of deal, but then Joe really liked what was happening so much and believed in Sammy and Weil's vision that, you know, he understood the compute that was happening in Web2 and how large it was and could see the storage compute, all the applications running on top of it in Web3. And so he wanted to go and build a more robust partnership and, you know, have some more skin in the game than just a consulting agreement. So from then on, I met Sammy and Weil in Dubai. I talked a lot with them on the phone, brought lawyers, brought all these different people, Joe and others to the table to make Web3 Cloud happen. But it was pretty soon after my my start at Consensys. So one of the first projects that came across my my desk.
And in the end, Nia is a great story. So, Sammy, were you working still at one of the foundries or Texas Instruments or Intel, or were you like in between and you got the bug? How did you get the bug? And was the timing just?
I mean, the yeah, this is a brilliant way of laying out the story, Maggie. The I have been as I probably mentioned earlier, kind of after the Global Foundries activity and semiconductor with Mubadala. Then the AI company with IBM, this is now 2016, it became difficult to ignore the whole blockchain and crypto space. Web3 wasn't used terminology frequently at that time, but you know, in the technology space, it was very difficult to ignore. So I focused on starting something in that space. We actually went, Weil and myself, my co-founder, whom I've known from Intel days, 20 plus years, who happened to work for Mubadala as well, or one of Mubadala entities, got together and said, look, we need to kind of bring in an expert in the space. We like Consensys. We like Joe. We, as Maggie mentioned, we kind of engaged on the premise of hiring Consensys as a consultant to us to advise us on how to kind of maneuver the compute infrastructure idea, if you will, of the Web3 space. But then we met Maggie, we met Joe, we met Jeremy and the rest of the Consensys team. It was, you know, we clicked. Joe wanted to build something bigger than just a consultancy relationship, like Maggie mentioned. Long story short, Web3 Cloud was born in 2018 as a joint venture between AMD, Consensys, and the founders. We went to Joe and said, we have to steal Maggie. And we basically, with a lot of effort and convincing and charm and managed to convince Joe to let us take Maggie with us and became independent entity. And we named it Web3 Cloud.
So it's a joint venture between AMD, which obviously is important to this, and obviously Joe and Consensus have so much knowledge and are ahead of the curve and can hopefully see around corners to help you around infrastructure and compute. So it's really interesting. And then when did you really know there was a business there? So what's the first thing? You partner with AMD, you buy equipment.
Yeah, I mean, so 2016, 2017, we said, look, decentralized compute, the next internet, the previous internet runs on massive compute infrastructure spread across the planet, owned by few, as we mentioned earlier. The next internet is going to require massive compute infrastructure. And we need to have the right co-travelers, the right partners to kind of play in that space. That's kind of the 10,000 feet level insight. And this is what led to the build up of Web3 Cloud, the way it's being built, or it's built now. We closed the contracts in 2018, announced the company public in 2019, started building the compute infrastructure. 2020 became revenue generating. And fast forward a couple of years later, and here we are on the process of closing a de-SPAC deal and becoming public.
And is the worst part of this meeting me? Like, what's been the worst day? When did you know there was trouble? Was it the first Zoom call?
Meeting you was the most fun part, Howard.
So, because you've had to explain this 700 times, including today, and I'm still taking notes and screwing this up. So, what has been the biggest disappointment? You're going to both have different views. If you could have plotted 2016 to today, Maggie, you've now been through. This is a second nasty bear market. What gets you mad about the things that have happened? Is it too much money? Is it misdirection? Is it maximalist? Is it the verbiage? Like, what is the thing that drives, like, how far behind are we, or is this just normal? So that's not even a question, but Maggie, we'll answer all those.
Answer all the questions.
Yes.
About what drives me a bit crazy in the space.
Yeah.
So yes, the first, going through your first bear market is never fun. So might get some Pepto-Bismol or something if your stomach is uneasy about it. But the bear markets aren't the worst part, because it's really focused on building. And, you know, out of the last bear market, amazing companies came out of that. So the whole decentralized finance or DeFi ecosystem was, you know, born in a bear market. The thing that drives me crazy is when people don't understand that what's being built are tools and they're not answers to why they're not wealthy. So non-fungible tokens are tools. DAO structures are tools. Even storage infrastructure, everything we're building is a tool to build a business that accrues more value to the people who are building the business or, you know, building the product. And so it puts more ownership in the people that are building these things, and value is accruing to all these different people. But it's not, you know, you launch an NFT or you launch a token or you have an idea for Uber on the blockchain and then you should be rich within, you know, four or five days. So I think that's what can get a little noisy. At times it can feel noisy and people will complain, not understanding that these are just new tools that empower you more as a builder and a creator, but you still have to have the sense and the savviness and the thing that people want on top of it in order for it to work out for you.
Yes. If there was no social media, Web3 would be so much further along because people wouldn't know they could scam other people, right? Like, it's the interpretation of the tools. It's like Home Depot might not have gotten built if everybody had their own way of scamming contracting, right? Like, you got to be able to, I need to be able to, I don't go into Home Depot because I want to build a home. I still think it's worth it for me to pay a contractor. But in Web3, I've built a Web2 company, good or bad. I built it and I know what I would have liked to have had. I would have liked to have had maybe no VC. I would have liked to have not had as many engineers. I would like to have not had to wait for iOS and Google approval. I would have liked to have maybe to be able to take Ethereum and a credit card. You know what I mean? And that's what Web3 is, tools to allow someone like me to just grab shit off the shelf and put all these pieces together, as you would say, using the term open source. But I think because of social media, every figure, since everybody's connected, you might as well try and make a buck off of it without even thinking about how good or bad these tools are. So yes, thanks for laying that out, Maggie. What is, for Sammy, what do you see? How ahead or behind are we? And what is the next click here that just makes everything, makes everybody understand it?
I think we are in the adoption curve, to use an analogy, if you compare it to the internet that we're used to, and dating myself in the process, we are 1997, 1998 in the internet days. So we are very early in the adoption cycle. Obviously, crypto and blockchain is a known terminology. I think what we need to see next is clarity and confidence from the regulation framework to make it easier for the institutions to come in a big way. I mean, we see that significant names that, you know, 2 years ago we would not have imagined that they would get into the crypto space now have their own trade desks and their launching different kinds of financial instruments around crypto. Massive, massive names. We all know all of them. It's stunning that all of these entities now are in that space. Again, 2 years ago, you would be crazy to kind of dream of that. So I think regulations will lead to comfort at the institution level, will lead to adoption, will lead to larger developer community around all the different use cases using all the tools that Maggie mentioned, and more innovation. I think so that's one. I think that is going to be a catalyst, if you will. Mm-hmm. I think we're progressing in that space in a meaningful way. I mean, obviously, I wish we were faster here in the US, but nonetheless, we are progressing responsibly in that direction. Bear markets are good and bad. I mean, bear markets obviously are bad for your portfolio value, but they're good for building. Bear markets are excellent times for you to build. Prices of compute infrastructure and hardware substantially lower than it was a year ago across the entire semiconductor ecosystem. You're able to ship things. You know, a year ago, shipping, it's 60% cheaper to ship stuff from China to the US, for example, today. So bear markets are not bad. Bear markets are good.
Love them.
If you are in the building business like us, you actually, this is an opportunity for you to kind of prepare for the upcoming cycle.
Yes. So this is why I said, like, sometimes you just get lucky, right? I didn't understand crypto. I didn't like the people that were explaining it to me. Not that I didn't trust them. I didn't like them. But now I have the people that steered me into Web 2, steering me into, I don't need to be first, right? And there's some places I'll never go, no matter how many people have gone. But now all the signals are there. And so what should people then think about infrastructure? Who is a customer? Like, what needs to go well for you? Why are you so confident that infrastructure is the way, is the next thing that has to happen? Sammy?
I mean, look, we've seen the movie before. Again, dating myself, the compute infrastructure and the standardization that led to the buildup of all these data centers and then the millions of applications that basically we live within on a daily basis. We've seen that movie before on the, you know, in the web, in the current internet.
Correct.
We are confident this movie is repeating. New compute infrastructure is necessary for the decentralized internet. That is Web3, and that's what we focus on. This is where our skill set is. This is how we put our partnerships together. This is what we have, you know, kind of the expertise that we have, and the secret sauce is how do we facilitate the buildup of this massive compute infrastructure needed, physical infrastructure needed for the new wave of use cases.
So let me put my, because I'm not a pumper, I'm more like a realist, and I want to explain this to my audience, is if we look back at history, and a very recent history, Warren Buffett, who's called Bitcoin rat poison, forgetting whether he believes or not, and what JP Morgan, what Jamie Dimon says, in the end, he's somewhat genius, even though his messaging is mean and harsh and no one knows truly. It's like when a pitcher throws at a batter only the pitcher knows. But his owning of Apple is really a bet on Bitcoin, right? Because if it becomes big enough or important enough, and other protocols, because if it becomes big enough, Apple will build a wallet. Apple will, you know, be the bank. Apple will have a crypto exchange. Apple will do all the things that are necessary. Apple may, you know, lower their app store fees. So in a way, he's already made his bet because he has so much money. And this is what people don't understand. Well, crypto's not a thing because Warren Buffett doesn't. He couldn't move the needle if he bought all of crypto. So his bet is on Apple, saying that if it becomes a thing and 10 million or 100 million wallets happen, Apple's the best play. So you sit in a different spot. And so in that play, I guess he's going to say one day when crypto gets big enough, Amazon's my proxy for compute. Explain to people the difference between how he's thinking about it and how you're thinking about it, because there's that in-between where Web3 cloud can grow and hundreds of Web3 clouds the same. Yes?
I wish I can get inside Buffett's brain. And
I know. I'm starting to just... It's just size, law of large numbers. Well, he doesn't have to worry about it.
Exactly. I don't understand exactly how he has thinking about it. I think the logic you laid is very, very thoughtful. As you described, he monetizes no matter how you slice it, given right. the breadth and width of his portfolio. Where we sit is in a different spot. We say, look, new compute is needed, new business model is needed, and there should be a company that helps developers in the Web3 world bring their creation into the physical world. Most of the protocol developers are focused on the bits, and the atoms needed to run those bits look different, not at the atom level, but at the compute level. At the atom level, they're the same. At the compute level, they look different than the previous revolution around the internet. And there isn't really, there should be many Web3 clouds like us dedicating their energy, their skills, their talents, their capital to help those developers run those new use cases and new protocols on the most optimal hardware infrastructure needed for their use cases. And that's basically what we are doing. And that's why we are excited. We are excited because, you know, we are, as I mentioned to you earlier or before, Howard, we are kind of Web3 maximalist, if you will. We're not a particular crypto maximalist. We are Web3 maximalist. Mm-hmm. We think Web3 brings a lot of good to the world. And that Web3 requires physical infrastructure. And we are very good at laying physical infrastructure. So we're putting all our energy to put that physical infrastructure on the ground, in the ground, so that Web3 protocols and use cases scale quickly and accrue value that like we described earlier to everybody.
So today, the money you've raised, how many stand-up facilities do you have?
We are in 6 data centers, 100% in the US, and we are adding, on a quarterly basis to our footprint.
And so you've got to manage, and this is the hard part, you and Maggie, you've got to manage the boom bust cycle. Maybe I'm wrong. That is compute and transportation, technology cycles, buying this stuff, price changes in compute. Then you've got to, obviously it doesn't work if Web3 isn't growing, but I think we can all agree it's growing. And then you've got to manage the hardware manufacturers. So what's the hardest part of this?
All of it is hard. I think having the discipline to maneuver the cycles is probably the most important part, because you need to be disciplined, and you need to be disciplined in hiring. You need to be disciplined in spending. You need to be disciplined in investing. It takes a lot of guts to say, you know what, bear market, I have a vision, we believe in it, we are going to invest. We are going to, it took a lot of guts for us to say, pandemic occurred, lockdown, March 2020, but we are flooring the paddle and building our compute infrastructure, and we became revenue generating 2 months after the lockdown. So managing emotions and the discipline of dealing with the cycles at the macro and the micro level takes enormous amount of cycles and skills from all entire management team. I would say that's probably the hardest part. But we are very, very, very good at building compute infrastructure. We're very, very good at negotiating the best deals, getting the best hardware from point A to point B and deciding point B, A, you know, C, D, where do we put it for most optimal use?
Yeah.
That is something that we are very good at, and we continue to build up on that skill.
Yeah, my partners, you know, Doug and Paul and Lazaro, we've, you know, visited the centers, and it's really intriguing. Is it more storage or compute? How should people think about this? How do you want people to think about this?
You can't do anything without storage. You can't do anything without compute. Every application requires both to run. Mm-hmm. And the magic is, you know, what's the mix mm-hmm. that gives you maximum ROIC and gives the developers the maximum flexibility?
Right. There's a few key knobs that you're constantly got to, you got to be listening to all the macro winds and the prices, and there's knobs that eventually you'll be turning.
Absolutely. And also you have to be embedded in the ecosystem. I mean, Maggie and Maggie's team spent enormous amount of time and energy being in every possible developer forum, in every possible industry event, networking within all the creators as much as possible, and being on top of the innovation in that space. It's very, very critical that you are, you know, because that we are the bridge. Basically, we are the
bridge.
We are the bridge between the developers and the physical world.
And you know me, I kept my mouth shut for months, let my team work on this, but now I see it. Meaning, I'm so confident. Again, I'll never understand infrastructure, and I respect everything that's been built and what you guys have built. But as a user now, as someone who's going to need compute, as someone who totally gets it, I'm 57 and an idiot. So imagine the tens of millions of people where the light bulb's going to go out. Meaning, I'm so excited, and I'll walk you through what I'm building. I'm so excited that I'm building something. So the 20 to 40,000 people that read my email and tweets a day will be able to practically see how I think about NFTs and payments and compute and infrastructure and the word trustless, which we'll get to in a second, because I can now use these things in the way that I want to use them. So for me, Maggie, I come to you and I say, I've got 5,000 NFTs, or I have a business. What does a customer, who calls Web3, or what does a customer look like, and what does the day-to-day look like of building this brand? Like who is Web3 doing business with?
Yes. So we don't have anybody coming to us with their NFT collection yet. We're not quite at that stage. So as Sammy mentioned, since I've been in the space, I've been going to every developer conference, every industry conference, getting to know builders. So lead developers, CTOs and CEOs and COOs of protocols. And the investors.
Got
so
it.
I know the investors at Paradigm. I know the CEO of Aave, which is a lending platform. I know the CEO of a Pocket Network, which is a decentralized infrastructure play. So that's where I've spent a lot of my energy, getting to know who these teams are, what they're building, and what their needs are. So you mentioned timing is everything. In 2018, when it was a down market, it was a lot easier to get to know the key players who were still here, believing in building in things. So my network, or my, you know, one degree of separation is pretty large. If we want to talk to somebody, it's likely I can get them within a day. If I don't know them, somebody I know knows them. So that's how I think about it. But more than that, so we'll see a trend happening, or we'll be staying on top of trends. So what I do is I'd like to dive in research what that topic is. So if it's a storage, or this new area called zero knowledge systems, where we can, you know, prove that something happened without knowing what went into it, I'll go learn how it works, bring it back to the team. The team and I will identify what's the compute or storage need for that specific use case. And then I'll go and I'll get all the CEOs and founding teams of those companies and start talking with them. And we can do a lot of different things with them. Since we have AMD as our joint venture partner, we can even bring AMD to the table when these protocols that are building software are starting to now really think about, like, what is my optimal hardware design look like? And we actually have done that with protocols before and helped them, you know, bring down the costs of their design and the efficiency of their design by bringing AMD to the table. So as Sammy mentioned, we're really that bridge, and that's by getting to know the people building this stuff and working with them from the very beginning of what they're trying to build.
Absolutely. So, so you're the bridge, but what is, sorry to interrupt, but you're the bridge, but you have a lot of rep, like the it's not a non-revenue business. So what I'm saying is, how does the machine, how does the register ring for Web3?
Yeah. So the difference between Web2 and Web3 is Web3 is run by blockchain protocols. And so these protocols automatically or autonomously reward people with their tokens for doing certain activities. And in our case, it's deploying compute or deploying storage infrastructure. Yes. So that's actually codified or coded into the software of these blockchain protocols. So we know that, we do the research, and then we deploy the infrastructure, and then we automatically start earning those protocol rewards.
So how does Web3 think about this then in terms of growing the business and getting paid?
Yeah, I mean, as we mentioned earlier, we are the bridge between bits and atoms. Protocol developers are genius in building incredible protocols with the most creative use cases and the most creative, you know, open source applications that are in a software space. They need the physical layer to run, the physical layer that exists today within the three or four or five backyards we mentioned is in many cases not suitable from the kind of compute inside, but also most certainly not suitable from the cost and lock that you see in the current Web2. So they need somebody to go and build a new physical layer, a new physical infrastructure that is decentralized, that is outside of the lock, that is exactly the right compute architecture they need for their application, for their protocol, and takes on the hard work of laying that infrastructure. And that's basically us.
And so you're also a software company.
We build our own software, but our software is meant to optimize the hardware for the protocol and monitor the thousands and tens of thousands of devices we have within our data centers. We have not ventured into the protocol building a piece of the stack yet.
It's just fascinating. So a couple more terms and then a few more questions. Whenever the word trust gets thrown around, I get nervous. There's this word trustless. What does trustless mean?
Let's see. Maggie, do you want to start with this and I'll come in? I think Maggie will have an excellent description.
Thank you.
Yes. So what we mean when we're talking about trustless or trustlessness in crypto and Web3. So this goes all the way back to the beginning of crypto. This is why so many people found it revolutionary, is that you don't need to have a trusted or third party, a bank, a person, any type of intermediary between you and, you know, sending money to someone else anywhere else in the world. So you no longer have to trust parties to verify transactions, to be in the middle of any type of exchange you have. And so the system of blockchains, they allow you to execute actions without relying on any other human or organization in the middle of it. And since there's no intermediary party, that's the thing that you used to have to trust. Eliminating that makes these systems trustless. So now you can interact with anybody anywhere in the world, and you can guarantee that, you know, your money or your NFT or whatever action you're going to take is going to happen. And it's all being executed by code. And now you can interact with humans you don't even know and you don't have to trust. And so because there's no human intermediaries between you and the way these transactions are done, it's called trustless.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's revolutionary, yeah. Right? This whole innovation around, I think it's probably the biggest innovation in the whole blockchain, is the ability to digitize trust. We have transformed trust from a function that is done by a massive centralized entity to a utility that by plugging into the Ethereum network, for example, as if you're plugging into power for your coffee maker, you're plugging into the Ethereum network, and you don't need to do anything just by plugging into it, meaning executing transactions on it. You enjoy the trust of the entire blockchain that's called Ethereum. That is revolutionary, and that has led to use cases that we couldn't imagine. For example, decentralized finance. DeFi is tens of billions of dollars sitting on protocols run by people that you've never met. You don't know them. You don't know where they are. But you know that they're running on a significantly trustworthy consensus layer-based network called Ethereum.
And since you brought up Ethereum, what is the merge happen? What is staking to the person listening here that's going to hear this a lot?
Maggie?
Yes.
Maggie?
Yes.
This is why SheFi is such a good idea.
Yeah,
Maggie?
It really is. staking is the act of locking up or depositing. So when you hear the word stake, just think depositing your crypto into a blockchain. And for doing that, you earn rewards in that same crypto back. So it's like a high yield savings account for your crypto, to put it in traditional financial terms. But the user just has to deposit their crypto, and while it's deposited, they're earning rewards for doing that. And if they unstake it or they claim their deposit back, then they'll stop earning rewards. Staking can be done through exchanges, which is why probably a lot of people may have heard of it, because Coinbase offers it, Gemini offers it, and so it's becoming more popular. And the reason staking exists is blockchains, Ethereum now post-merge, is a proof of stake network. And so what that means is that people lock up financial stake. And for doing so, that stake is used to validate transactions on the network and secure the network, without going into too much detail, but that's the idea. So proof of stake, you're putting up capital, that's your proof of stake. And this stake allows validators to validate transactions on the network, update the state of the network, and also secure the network.
I still think it's, I know that you understand it, but it still has. I've been around so long, but I get the lending part. So for staking to be mainstream, what makes it mainstream for people to understand? I mean, is it just doing it on Coinbase, or is it some other thing that like leapfrogs that people understand it?
I mean, I think Maggie kind of said it in her description. Basically, it's the future yield interest generating savings account is basically going to be staking. Staking is from consumer point of view and enterprise and the institutions. You have digital assets in your portfolio. You can have those digital assets sit in a cold wallet and generate no passive income for you. Or you can take those or a portion of your digital assets portfolio and stake it in the different protocols. And now it's generating passive income for you. This is true for the individual, for the enterprise, and for the institution. And and there are many examples, right? I mean, we know that many public companies have Bitcoin and Ethereum on their balance sheet. And in many cases, they are monetizing those through a multitude of staking vehicles. So it's a way of generating rewards, to generating passive income for you. That's this is how consumers should view it. From the blockchain perspective, it's a mechanism of securing the blockchain. Basically, if there is $1 billion of staked tokens of protocol XYZ, roughly speaking, you're going to need to mount $500 million worth, or 51%, $500,000 worth to attack that network. It just raises the barrier of entry. It's basically the walls around the vault where your money is safe.
Correct. And this is what's exciting is this part plus NFTs is where this growth is going to, this endless growth is going to come from. Because an NFT is just a file.
Yeah.
And so When I say the word nodes are going to dethrone tech giants, it's a great article from Apple to Google. What does that say? Explain that to people.
This is basically the summary of what we have been discussing.
Correct.
A new internet paradigm is emerging. It's going to require new business model that is not like the one we have today in the internet. And it's going to require a new physical infrastructure players like Web3 Cloud and new bits, digital logical infrastructure players like the thousands and thousands of companies that are in the Web3 space. And you know, we've seen it in technology. We read about it. Significant dislocation in technology creates new leaders and in many cases remove previous ones. We've seen it over and over again in history.
Yeah, this is what makes the Buffett stuff so interesting, where a guy who didn't own tech is 40% of his money's in Apple. If I think of Web3 and all the definitions you've shared with me, the internet is owned by the builders and users, orchestrated with tokens. Warren can't make that bet, so the best bet to make is on the biggest monopoly that exists today, which is Apple, which can easily enter the business because they can work with the government. The other definition of Web3, I like it, is the internet of value. Now we can send and receive more than bits. We can send and receive value.
Exactly.
And for all those people that have been locked out, that's what's exciting. What makes you most bullish? What's going to happen? Is there anything that like is super cool, Maggie, that people should have on their radar that like, what brings on this next 50 million people? Does it have to be a better wallet? Does it have to, what is the thing?
It's hard to pick one thing. I definitely think you bring up a good point about the wallet. So a wallet is what it sounds like. It's a place to store and manage and send crypto from, but it's really what allows you to interact with the blockchain. So it's like your gateway to Web3. And right now there's a lot of, you know, signing transactions and seeing a lot of techie stuff in that process and having to remember seed phrases, which is this recovery phrase in case you lose your wallet, but you can't store it in your computer, even in a password manager. So it's, you know, puts a lot of responsibility on every individual person. So, you know, with ownership of your assets comes great responsibility, but I still think there's going to be more abstraction needed, more interesting recovery models that are maybe more social related, ways to, you know, make it easier to use this gateway and start using all these applications, better user interfaces that will really lead the next onboarding of millions of people. It'll have to be as easy as, you know, an app on your phone, and we still have a little bit of ways to go.
Hard to bet against that not happening at this point is my why I'm excited.
Yes. I was just at a Ethereum conference last week in Bogota, Colombia, called DevCon, and that was a big topic. How do we abstract things away that are unnecessary for people to have to deal with?
And because to me, I'm not a gamer, so it needs to be a place that is a place where I feel comfortable to keep some money as like a change purse. It starts out as a change purse, but then becomes something much more than that. It's hard for me to bet against that. What's the most interesting chain out there, blockchain out there, like to you? Maggie first, and then the geek next.
I think that's a tough one to pick from. I did a panel with a woman named V. Lee, who was a regulator of 10 years and now is at Bain Capital Crypto, working on policy. And she ended the panel, I was hosting it, by saying, let's, you know, have policies that let 1,000 blockchains bloom. And I liked that a lot. You know, I come from the Ethereum ecosystem. It was really cool because I didn't need to be a VC in order to invest in it. And that's not really the case anymore with some of these blockchains. But I see all of them having different use cases and purposes. So you'll have storage, I will bet my money on people are building blockchains with stable diffusion, which is this new AI technology, text to pictures.
People will
be building blockchains just for social media. So, you know, Web3 Cloud wants, as V said, 1,000 blockchains to Bloom, because as we mentioned, we can support all of them with our infrastructure. So I'm not going to place a bet on a favorite, and maximalism's never a good thing to be, even in life. You want a diversified portfolio.
I'm glad you gave that answer, because that's why we're so excited to work with you. Is the timing for me is two things. It seems impossible that 100 million people won't have a great wallet. It may be 1,000 wallet Bloom, but we're closer than we were 4 years ago. And we've got now all the cynicism. Cynicism, is like a bear market, is good. You know, bull markets are born on doubters. And so not everybody gets to play. If you want to, you don't have to play. You can still use dollars, luckily, if you live in the U.S. But I think 1,000 wallets Bloom, that would be the best scenario. And so I'm not a wallet maximalist. And I think, cool to hear that, because you're positioned well for letting 1,000 blockchains Bloom. So I love that answer. As a geek, though, Sammy, AMD or Intel? Seeing that you worked at Intel and your partners with AMD.
AMD, of course. Dr. Lisa is just an unbelievable CEO.
And at some point, though, will this be international, or is this deglobalization thing mean that Web3's focus on the U.S. for now? How does that work?
I mean, the whole notion of decentralization is to get out of to kind of free yourself from the geopolitical, geographical disruption that we get from time to time. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the beauty of decentralization. Mm-hmm. In the physical world, because we are in the atom space, shipping, supply chain disruption, supply chain resilience, all what's happening at the macro level between China and et cetera are, pieces in the chess that we have to kind of plan for and have de-risk A, B, and C. And that's part of what we do. But at the blockchain level, at the Web3 level, it's meant to abstract all these complexities and kind of rise above it.
Yeah, I mean, why we, Doug, Paul, I, Mike, and my board and team made this bet is it feels to me that compute infrastructure, and we'll just end with explaining the difference between Bitcoin and compute as it relates to other blockchains, is, you wanted to own an S&P of crypto. There's some companies that have some creative tokens that created the track. But indirectly, if someone the government's not allowing ETFs. So indirectly, these infrastructure companies become kind of an ETF. So really, an infrastructure company is almost the most interesting diversified way for an individual eventually, when there's a few of these trading publicly, to own a piece of this directional bet that is compute.
That's exactly the key insight that led us to building this company the way it's built now. Because the best way to judge a protocol, one of the best ways to judge a protocol and its utility, is to look at the physical infrastructure that underpins that protocol. Mm-hmm. And if that's significant, that protocol has utility, has developers, has adoption, and is here to stay.
Yes. So whereas a geek could look on GitHub and say, this is where the action is, a retail investor one day, whether they can put in a Bitcoin ETF or an Ethereum ETF, doesn't become about that, because there'll be companies like yourself that people can say, I own a piece of all the best. And
1,000 blockchains to Bloom, like Maggie said, all inside Web3 Cloud.
What a perfect way to end it. You guys, thanks for being patient. This has been such a long process, from 2016. You've compounded your headaches by believing this should be a public company. You've done a great job putting partners together. So kudos to you, because this stuff has to happen. So it might as well be you, because to the patient people that understand the tech, go the spoils. And I think the timing is very good for this. I really appreciate your time.
Likewise.
And I'm excited to have you both on, as we have kind of like SPAC week meets crypto week meets Web3 week. And we have all these special guests coming up, and you guys will be part of the panels. And we really try and break this down for people.
Love it. Looking forward.
Okay, Maggie, thank you for doing it. Such a great job with us, and for going to work with these guys and for falling under their spell. It's been really fun learning from you and working with you, and we'll be talking a lot together over the next few months. And I will let you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Knut!
Howie!
Do you feel like I'm there? And you can see I still struggle with verbalizing, but over the course of a few podcasts here with them and some other guests, people hopefully will really, because I don't have all the answers.
No.
But does it feel like I'm understanding it a little better?
You are understanding it quite well. I am, I still got a long ways to go, but I'm sure that these next pods will help explain things.
But think about how complicated, they've been at it since 2016. He's got 20 years at Intel building foundries. He knows what has to be done, but there's just so many moving parts. And then Maggie is such a great front person, eloquently explaining the business side of this.
And, absolutely.
And the details. But I think the key part of this is, you know, we've had such complaining about the SEC, and ETFs, et cetera, but the market just takes care of this themselves, right? People will figure this out, right? Amazon was a great way to own Web 2 because they powered everything. And if we are correct, or I am correct, or my team is correct, or Sammy is correct, and AMD and Consensus are correct, it will be a compute company like this that will become a proxy, maybe not this one, could be 1,000 of these, that become a proxy for how you should own the next level of internet with less risk or more risk, depending on how they run their treasury. But this is really such an interesting moment in time because it's global, it's decentralized, and it seems pretty fair. But yet there's just tons of risk, but that comes with the opportunity. So thanks for doing that.
Of course.
It's great to have. You'll be hearing more of Sammy and Maggie here on Panic with Friends as we go deep down the rabbit hole and teach me how to do this over the next few months. Because in this panic, I could talk about stocks and I could talk about the VIX, but I'm trying to also position our firm Social Leverage and a lot of our funds that listen in here on how to find a 10 or 20 year trend. And I feel like we are finally at the cusp of something huge. So you can call it crypto, you can call it blockchain, you can call it decentralization, you can play it with infrastructure or high-risk gaming, like playing at independent companies. But I'm fascinated by this infrastructure play because of the 1,000-wallet idea and the 1,000 blockchains. Much like religion, Knut, there's not one religion, there's thousands of them. And they just keep happening. And it's not to judge one or the other. For certain people it works, for other people it doesn't. And so you are listening to Panic with Friends. Knut and I sit down with friends, investors, traders, venture capitalists, people who are living, trying to live, peek around the corner. We share. We do this once a week. You can go to Spotify, Apple, Google, search Panic with Friends or Howard Lindzen. Subscribe. Every Thursday you get an alert. You won't have to worry about it. And listen to one of these podcasts. Have a great week, everybody.
Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.